We are live. What's going on, everyone? And welcome into the first episode of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. My name is John. I'm one of the co-owners of Nuclear and GW Legion. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Hutch Bennett, Courtney Spitz, and Tim Bowman. Behind the scenes, we've got our producer, Joey, who also runs the account Scheffler Fans on X. You may be familiar with him. Tonight, we've got a lot to talk about. This is going to be a weekly show. We're going to try and do a live show every Monday night on the Nuclear Golf handle. We're also going to be putting this out on all of your favorite podcast platforms after the fact. So you can look for this show to be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, potentially another few places as well. Tonight, we've got a lot to talk about. Obviously, Rory won the Players this morning. He was in a playoff with JJ Spaun, took it in the playoff. Rory also taxied his golf clubs to Bay Hill last week. So that was interesting. We're going to get into that. Tiger is out again with another injury, ruptured Achilles. He's also apparently dating Vanessa Trump, so we'll delve into that a little bit. Brooks Koepka reportedly told Fred Couples that he wants to return to the PGA Tour. Colin Morikawa was called out by Rocco Mediate, Brandel Chamblee, and Paul McGinley. He says he's got no regrets over his decision to not speak with the media after his loss at the API. We're also going to get into some March Madness picks as well. Trent Ryan from Barstool shot a 61 at TPC Sawgrass for 8 holes, including a 13 on number 17. So we'll get into that. And we've also got our viral video of the week, which is Rory McIlroy taking a fan's phone. So without further ado, Hutch, you watched the action over the weekend. Let's talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was good. I know we were kind of talking about it behind the scenes and texting about it. I firmly believe, because last week Courtney and I picked Rory to win, I firmly believed he was just going to slam the door on. He was up 3 shots with 5-ish holes to play. When he had that short birdie on 15, I don't want to say short, but makeable, I thought he was going to make it. And then I even told you guys he was going to come up on 16 and make an eagle and just end it right there. I miscalculated badly. He missed the putt. Then he left the chip short on 16 and made par, which had to feel like a bogey. And then next thing you know, we're over here playing on Monday. And if JJ Spaun hadn't got his yardage just completely wrong this morning on 17, who knows what would have happened. But it was just given to Rory is what it felt like to me.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic tournament from top to bottom to watch. I mean, you had the – kind of the unknowns with JJ Spaun. You know, I'm not super familiar with him. So, but you had some of the big names at the top of the leaderboard. You know, JT goes out and shoots a course tying record, 62. That was electric. That was fun to watch. It was fun to see him get part of his game back. I thought Rory, you know, was a big pick from the beginning. The switch on the equipment was big. I thought him getting back into his comfort zone there was going to be crucial for him to maneuver through that course. But he looked solid, and then I kind of called the opposite of what Hutch said. I thought that he would falter coming down. There was just so much chaos all tournament long, 14 yeah. through 17, and so I knew that was going to be a factor. That for me, as a viewer, that's what made that tournament so much fun to watch, with the chaos on 17 and the high winds and balls in the water. But, you know, experience matters, and Rory played really well down the stretch. You know, his last 18 was a really solid 18, and then he closes it out in the playoff. But great tournament to watch.
I thought didn't it feel like to you when we were coming down on 70, like 71st and 72nd hole, it felt like he had lost. He was tied for the lead, but it felt like he was losing.
Yeah, I mean, you're just hoping that he doesn't make a catastrophic shot that takes away his chances. And I found myself rooting for JJ as well. I mean, I'm hoping this guy gets up there. He's got a good story. He seems like a awesome dude to be around him. He's just chill and, you know, goes with the flow. But I was rooting for both of them. I wanted both of them to hit the best shot they could, and wherever the chips fell, they would fall. But yeah, I'm with you, Hutch. He could have very easily had one miscalculation here or there, like JJ did on 17, and it turns the whole tournament for him. And I think maybe that's why I thought maybe he would falter a little bit. Just kind of playing against that, like, hey, I'm in the lead, people are chasing me. And maybe he just kind of was playing, I don't want to say playing safe, but playing not to hit the big miss.
Too safe. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty impressive that he won despite driving the ball average.
Yeah.
I think he hit less than 50% of his fairways all weekend at Sawgrass. That's tough. Like, tough to win doing that. So that was pretty impressive that his iron game was dialed in, his short game, and he putted pretty well. But he still has that – sometimes he just has that ability to not be able to close it out, like Hutch was talking about. You just think up three with five to go. He's – even if he doesn't birdie 15, he should have birdied 16 and closed it out then. But it's like – I don't know. Sometimes maybe the pressure gets to him down the stretch, like most golfers, and it doesn't make the putts or doesn't hit the correct shot. But not driving the ball well there and still winning was pretty impressive.
And I think it happens not just to the guys that are at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, Ashkay there has a chance. You know what? He was 10 under, and he had three or four prime birdie looks, and he just left those putts, you know, low side or a little bit short, and it was gut-wrenching to watch. I thought he was going to make a charge there in the last five. He just didn't make the putts, and who knows, maybe the nerves got to him a little bit too. You get a little shaky in the hands, and those putts are, I mean, they're not easy if you've got a six stroke lead or a one stroke lead. So
who knows? That far away from rolling that putt in on 18 to win. Like, that's a game of inches, dead in the cup.
3 turns, it's in.
Millimeters, really. And even Rory on the 72nd hole, 18, the hole made a great catch for him to even be in the playoff.
You could see he said he didn't think that thing was going right, but it went right.
Yeah.
When he hit that putt.
I think what John's trying to say, we're having a technical difficulty with John right there, but I think he's trying to
hear me now.
There we go.
Did you guys see that 4.5, 5 footer that he had yesterday on 18? Did anybody have flashbacks to that missed putt at the US Open?
At the US Open, yeah. Yeah.
Ouch.
My hands were shaking for him.
I think I was just. When you miss one of those putts like you did at the Open, it's always in the back of your mind from then on out.
Yeah.
Like,
I feel like he could make 10,000 of those in practice and still think about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. He actually, after the win this morning, he said he was talking about his tee shot today on 16. He said, honestly, standing over that tee shot on 16 this morning is the most nervous I've been in a long time. And then, you know, he hit it 336 yards. That was at the par five.
Yeah.
And, you know, took it from there essentially. Right. JJ went in the water at 17. And then it was ball game.
I can't believe he hit an 8-iron.
But we talked about that too. Like, he was so adamant, even in his presser after, he said he struck it exactly like he wanted. He said on the range in that wind condition, the 8-iron was flying 128. He said it was a perfect club. He wasn't upset about it. He didn't think he did anything wrong. He said he hit it just like he wanted to. He chose the right club that he thought. And he just thought the wind laid down, which is crazy to me that that's what it is, but he was adamant. So I guess we just got to go with it.
Yeah. Rory's actually the first European to win the Players Championship multiple times. That's courtesy of Justin Ray. He joins a pretty elite club of guys who are 2-time Players Champions, including Tiger and Jack, I believe. Right.
Yeah, I think only eight. He's one of 8 players ever to be multi-winners there.
Yeah, there's not very many guys on the list for sure. And I mean, if you're winning multiple players, you've got a pretty good resume. Scotty obviously won back-to-back Players Championships as well, right? He was trying to three-peat this year. Couldn't get it done.
Anytime you're on a list with Tiger, you're doing all right in life.
Yeah, for sure. And did you guys see the story about his driver and his fairway woods? So I guess it was at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He's using the new gear. You know, he's not happy with how it's performing. So on Saturday night of the Arnold Palmer, he has his agent order an Uber from his home in Palm Beach Gardens, Uber up his old fairway woods and driver. This is the QI10 models. Mm-hmm. It was $995 bill to get those clubs up to Bay Hill, and he used them on Sunday. And then he said afterwards that he's going to be using that new equipment, or like his old equipment, through at least the Masters. So TaylorMade can't be too thrilled with that, obviously. Like he said, it's been a bit of a tough adjustment this year with the new gear.
Yeah, it's a flex. That's nice to be able to to be able to afford a 900 plus Uber for not a person, but your golf clubs.
I hope he can afford it after the $4.5 million today.
I'd say that he's just throwing a $20 bill at it in our eyes, but you know, it's a flex move, but it just goes to show you how much time they put in, you know, dialing in their game, because he knew right away what he needed to do, and he knows the feel and he knows the distances and how he can shape his shots with those clubs. And so, you know, props to him for making that move. I mean, it was obviously the right move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, you know, some years you vibe with a new piece of equipment a little easier, like that QI10 that I'm using that they brought out last year. It was like love at first sight. I was like, this thing is amazing. That's what he said. And he said, I think when you feel like that about a golf club, it's very hard to change into something else. It ebbs and flows. Some years it's easier than others. So, I mean, obviously the manufacturer obviously wants these guys in the latest and greatest equipment, but if it's not going to be performing for them, then, you know, they got to make a decision on that. And I guess obviously he feels a lot more comfortable with last year's model. So it sounds like he's going to be using the QI10 for the next little bit here.
Yeah, I just bought some new Titleist irons about 2 weeks ago, and I think about them every day. So it's not shocking that he has a love for a certain golf club. I mean, I walk out of my garage and I don't look at him, I feel like I'm neglecting him. So feels good.
Courtney got those 75% off because he's left-handed and nobody sells left-handed clubs anyway.
You get what you can.
Anyways, we got to talk a little bit about Tiger. Obviously, he's out again with another injury. Just when we thought, you know, I mean, obviously, he never committed to the Players, but we, you know, maybe this injury happened kind of during that week in advance of the Players. But we thought everything was gearing up for, okay, he's going to play the four majors once again this year. You know, maybe the Hero and the PNC, which is still potentially on the books, but he's got a ruptured Achilles tendon. He said, as I began to ramp up my own training and practice at home, I felt a sharp pain in my left Achilles, which was deemed to be ruptured. And then he said he had a surgery at the hospital for special surgery in West Palm Beach. They said it was minimally invasive. So recovery timeline can vary for an injury like this. I mean, if you heal really quickly, it can be, you know, that 3 to 4 month range before you kind of start to resume activities. But, you know, they also say that it can be a longer term thing, like more like a 6 to 9 month timeline, which would pretty much bring us to the end of the year for him. I mean, it seems like the major championships this year are pretty much out the window now. Do you guys think this injury is a devastating setback for him, or do you think this
is going to be I just think the more injuries he gets, the older he gets, the harder it is for him to be competitive, because he's already had so many injuries before. He can't practice like he used to. He used to always dedicate his game on practicing, and it was everything was practice, repetition, 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 so that he didn't even have to think about the golf shot during the tournament. He would just step up and hit it. But when you can't practice the way he can, and then you get injured, that's 4 more months off, and then 4 more months off, and then his back's acting up, and then he can't. I mean, you try to be realistic, and yeah, I want him to win. Everybody wants him to win. We all want him to play, you know, in order for him to play, you know, he's got to be healthy enough to get his golf game in what he calls winning shape, and that's by practicing. And the more injuries he gets, the more times he tries to, you know, not overcorrect, but minimize one injury, you know, then this happens, or he's trying to save his back and then this happens. You know, I just worry about the injuries being too much to overcome, and the years just are flying by. I mean, he was 44, 45 when he got in a car wreck. Now he's almost 50 with a torn Achilles.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just one thing after another, it feels like, right? Like, it's just he can't catch a break. And all these injuries are just compounding. Like, I mean, the Achilles thing is literally a new issue for him to be dealing with, to rehab, get all the strength back up in his leg while he's already dealing with the recovery from the back, right? Yeah. We assume that things weren't the best, right? Like, with the back procedure that happened back in the fall. I mean, we saw him at TGL, but like, you know, there was, you know, a few signs here and there that he was moving kind of gingerly at certain stages of it. Right. You know, obviously he didn't play the Genesis after his mom passed. That was obviously the plan for him to play that. And then we saw he was walking the Seminole event thinking, okay, he's gearing up for the Players now, but I guess that would have been the time when he would have started to really ramp it up. It's true. Like his training would have intensified. He would have been walking more practice rounds at home, getting ready. And then this happens. And then now he's just out. And it's just, it's tough to see. It's tough for golf because we could really use some Tiger appearances right now as the game's still divided. And he brings so many eyeballs to the sport, even if it's just three or four times a year, helps amplify those tournaments when he's playing. So it's too bad.
I think it happened that week after the Seminole thing, but the week prior to the commitment deadline for the Players. Yeah. It had to have, because he had the Tuesday of Players Week is when he announced it. Anytime you see that letterhead, you guys know now, anytime you see that letterhead come across his Twitter account, it's usually bad news.
Like, yeah, it's like screen of death.
It's like the Law and Order. The Law and Order sound.
Those three stakes of his logo. It's just like just stabbing you in the heart because he knows that it's just bad news. It's gonna be bad news.
Yeah, it's like a blue screen on a Windows computer.
Yeah,
it's just it's not good. It's not good.
This sucks.
When do you guys think we're gonna see him? Is it gonna be the end of the year or is it 2026? What do you think?
PNC.
I mean, pretty sure. Pretty sure in 2025.
Oh, whoa! You
think so, Tim?
I think he's gonna try. I mean, yeah. I mean. The reality is Aaron Rodgers was throwing a football like 7 weeks. I mean, he wasn't playing in a game, but he was throwing a football 50 yards down the field. And, I mean, it's not unfeasible for these guys nowadays with the medical treatment out there. They get the best of the best. I mean, we just get, oh, here, go to the doctor, and it's 12 months recovery for you guys. But these guys get the best of the best. So it wouldn't surprise me if he tried for the British Open. It wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I think my mind is with you guys on the injuries piling up and the toll on his body, and it's a matter of time before there's just a timer that runs out. But then my heart says there are no realistic expectations for Tiger Woods.
You can
throw realistic expectations out the window. I mean, we've seen this guy do things that aren't realistic in the game of golf, and I will hold on to that hope, and I will – drink that Kool-Aid every day of the week. And I think he's going to surprise somebody. Now, whether he wins and plays great golf when he comes back, that's back to the conversation, like Tim said, of, you know, how sharp is his game? How much has he been able to practice? But I bet he's already putting.
I don't think he's putting yet.
We're at like exactly 4 months until the first day of the Open Championship.
Yeah.
I don't see, even if he can get to where he can swing and hit the ball. I know people I've seen online have talked about Langer coming back and winning and playing 3 or 4 months after. He's in the Champions Tour. He can use a cart. Even if they were to let Tiger use a cart, he's shown that he won't do it. So I just don't think getting back and getting his game in shape in the first place, which is why he wasn't playing to begin with, because he said his game wasn't good. Getting his game in shape to play, getting his body in shape to play, and then being able to walk. I know it's an Open Championship, so it'll be flatter, but to be able to walk all those holes, PNC just feels like, because after you miss the Open Championship, like, what's there to play? The hero, maybe. And then you're just into PNC and you're just shooting for 2026. It just feels like we're doing this every year at some point, and I hate it so much.
Yeah, and it seemed like this year was going to be more. Like he kind of hinted that he was trying to play more this year. But the good news is, I mean, for Tiger's personal life, I guess there's reports out there that he's back in a relationship. He's apparently dating Vanessa Trump. Vanessa Trump is obviously Donald Trump Jr.'s ex-wife. Don Jr. is President Trump's son. So apparently the two have been hanging out. Daily Mail was kind of first to report it. And then People also kind of got a quote from someone close to Don Jr. who said he's cool with the new relationship. And I mean, this doesn't come as a huge shock to me, to be totally honest with you. We've actually seen Vanessa Trump at some events recently. She was actually out at the Genesis Invitational. There was photos of her with her daughter, Kai, who's obviously a good golfer as well. She just picked up a TaylorMade sponsorship. She's going big on YouTube. She's doing these golf vlogs and play around with me kind of content. It's not a huge surprise. We saw her. She was also at TGL with Kai as well. They were like right in the stands behind, like right in the front row kind of thing, watching from a box. So, I mean, I'm not totally shocked with this news. So when it came out, I just kind of, I wasn't surprised. That's all I can say. What did you guys think?
Power move.
Yeah,
power move.
Yeah.
And the quote from Don Jr. kills me. Like, he's cool with it. Like, well, what else would you say? It's Tiger.
Yeah. If my wife or ex-wife wanted to go date him, I'd be cool with it too. Sounds good to me. if she wanted to leave me for him, all right. What am I gonna say?
Good decision, Ben.
Just send me something. Just like, I'm cool with it. Do whatever you want.
Here's a quote on this was on Daily Mail. I mean, it's essentially a tabloid, but I mean, we'll take what we can get. It essentially says she comes to his place on Jupiter Island. They're not living together. She comes over for maybe a few nights a week. They love hanging out, having dinner together. They're sticking close to home. Have decided not to make it a thing and go out in public. Not just yet, anyways. So, I mean, seems like they want their privacy, and I mean, they're not getting their privacy now, I guess, because it's gone public. But it's not like she wasn't at Tiger golf events, right? So she has been seen out in the wild, I guess you could say. So,
yeah, double top secret anymore.
Yeah, it's not a huge secret anymore, but it's out there now that they're a thing. So happy for Tiger. He needs support while he's injured. So hopefully this motivates him to get back as quick as he can. And obviously he's motivated to play with Charlie as well, right? They like to practice together. So hopefully that kind of motivates him.
If he needs a support from four new best friends, I know four people that would be great for it. One of them lives in Canada though. It's kind of a long way away.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's go to the Brooks story now, guys. I mean, Brooks Koepka reportedly told Fred Couples that he wants to return to the PGA Tour. So Fred Couples is on a radio show. He said, "I talk to Brooks Koepka all the time. I love Brooks Koepka, and I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything extra except I talk to him all the time. He wants to come back. I will say that I believe he really wants to come back and play the tour." So that's from Fred Couples, who, you know, now Fred Couples will take any opportunity to kind of shit on Liv, I got to say, right? He's one of the guys from the old boys club on the PGA Tour. So it's not a surprise that something like this is coming from him. But you do have to wonder, like, obviously, Brooks is the only player within Liv that's actually the general manager of his team. So he's actually the GM of the Smash GC. And then obviously, like, Brooks was asked about this and he said, like, you know, we'll see what happens. Nobody knows, except, like, I don't even know what's going to happen. We'll see what happens. He's reportedly under contract with Liv through, I believe, 2026.
Yeah.
It's up then. So remains to be seen kind of where this goes, obviously. But what are your guys' thoughts? Is Brooks planning a return to the PGA Tour?
He's gone. He is gone for so many reasons. His exact quote, like, there's one that he gave that Sports Illustrated reported. He said, "I talked to Fred quite a bit, but we don't go into too much detail about what's going on. Like I've said before, I'm not in those rooms. I've got a contractual obligation out here to fulfill, and then we'll see what happens." Anytime somebody says, "I have a contractual obligation to fulfill," they ain't re-upping that contract. He's leaving. He's gone. And you think back to what you saw in Full Swing, like, season one, where he just full on admits that he signed for the money. He was hurt. He didn't know if he'd ever get back to normal. So he took it for the money. Now he's healthy. He thinks he can go back and play. I just couple that with him using the words contractual obligations to fulfill. He's gone as soon as he came.
That was my thought too, was that he just I've always thought he didn't want to actually ever leave, but he did. And I think Hutch is right. When you use words like that, you're already thinking about being somewhere else. And he didn't really even deny anything of what Fred Couple said. He didn't full on come out and say, no, 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 that's not how it went down. I'm staying, I'm this and that. He just kind of did the little dance around the bush saying, yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. We'll see. Nobody ever asks me. Everybody else talks for me. And then when you actually ask the player, whoever it may be, they give you the song and dance and run around. So it's like, that's why we don't ask you, because we know you talk to these people, and these people might tell us or might not tell us a little more of what's going on behind the scenes. So I've always thought Brooks never really wanted to go. That's just my own opinion, you know, because it just felt like that.
I feel like
there's another quote here. It say, you know, this was Brooks. He said, I don't know where I'm going, so I don't know how everybody else does. Right. He said, right now I'm just focused on how do I play better? How do I play better in the majors? How does this team win? And then we'll figure out next year and how to play better again. It's the same thing. It's just a revolving cycle. He said, I've got nothing. Everybody else seems to know more than I do. So, you know, it remains to be seen with Brooks. He kind of plays it close to the vest. Right. He doesn't really give too much away. I do remember like when Brooks and Bryson both left for LIV, and like they were basically like denying it like a week before they left, right? Like it was like, why are you asking me that question? Like I remember Brooks was getting chippy with the media. I think it was at the US Open, if I remember correctly. And then next week he was gone, right? So it's just like you never really know what can happen. Who knows what these contracts entail, whether he can break it and leave early if he really even wants to do that. Just remains to be seen kind of where this goes. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Was he one of those ones that, remember that like there was one day that like all these top players put out statements online that we're all loyal to the PGA Tour? Was he one of the ones that did that?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. There's one other little interesting snippet as well. During the broadcast from like LIV Singapore this past week, I don't know if you guys caught this, but they actually had like an entire segment like on their post-game show, basically just doubling down on the fact that like Brooks is under contract. He's the only GM who's a player of their team, and just basically re-emphasizing why Brooks wouldn't leave. I think it was Jerry Fultz, the LIV announcer, who was going through that and kind of taking viewers through the reasoning as to why Brooks won't be leaving LIV anytime soon. I mean, obviously they're going to come out and say that, right? Did you guys catch that? Or
I did not see that. I think twofold. Brooks is I think he likes that competitive, I want to be the top player in the world. When he was on that run, I think he was digging that, as anybody rightfully would. I think he misses that aspect of the PGA Tour. There's not, to me, in the LIV side, it's not that competitive fire, winning majors, trying to be the top dog in the world, and the media talking to you about that. But then, as you guys said, we don't know what these guys think when they get a bag thrown in front of them. I mean, I thought Myles Garrett was leaving Cleveland. There's no way that dude returns. They throw a bag in front of him, he's back in Cleveland. So you just never know what these athletes are thinking, you know, until the time comes of when – that contractual obligation, as Hutch says, is presented to them. And I think that's why he's saying, let's see what happens. We'll wait. No idea. He's probably going to wait to see what LIV can do and what they can offer. And if he just feels like, you know what, I think the PGA Tour outweighs the money, then I think he'll come back. I hope he comes back. Gosh, I hope he comes back.
That's a cute little recruiting pitch they did after the thing. But if they really want to keep him, they need to give him about – a billion reasons why.
we'll see what happens. Another interesting thing to watch, there's talk about Bryson as well, so we'll just see about Bryson. Bryson's morphed into a huge content king right now, right? Like he's literally just top of his game with the content. He's been on top for a while now. The other thing I want to get into here, interesting, is actually Colin Morikawa. So basically what happened is, you know, Colin Morikawa had a tough defeat at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. decided to not speak with the media afterwards. You know, he's getting blasted by Rocco Media to begin with. Rocco Media said, biggest bunch of horseshit you could ever say, period. I mean, that is the dumbest, most selfish garbage you could ever say. Mr. Palmer would have hunted him down. This is after Morikawa basically doubled down on his reasoning for not speaking with the media. And then you also had Brandel Chamblee, Paul McGinley, just kind of ripping on him, saying that he's, you know, doing a disservice to the fans by not speaking with the media afterwards. And Colin basically came out and said he had no regrets. He said, he went out of his way at the end of his presser at the players before the tournament began. He said, right at the very end, presser was over. He said, I just want to add one more thing. Might bite my tongue after saying this, but to the Brandel Chamblees, to the Paul McGinleys, Rocco Mediates of the world, I don't regret anything. That's all he said. So making his opinion clear that he has no regrets about, you know, dipping on the media, evading the media after his round on Sunday at the Arnold Palmer. I mean, what did you guys think about this? Is he doing the fans a disservice? Do you think he should have spoken to the media after the loss? Or is this just a situation where he's running hot and he doesn't feel like he needs to explain himself after?
Well, he goes on to say in the presser that he was out there signing autographs for everyone that was available. And he goes on to make a slight point. He said, the media did not follow me when I was out there signing autographs to the fans. So, like, his reasoning is, yeah, I didn't do a presser after the tournament, but I didn't just pack up my stuff and hit the car and screech the tires out of there. I get his point of view and his justification of not speaking to the media, but it never is going to go well for any athlete who loses and then doesn't speak or doesn't join the high five, the, you know, the handshake for the opponents at the end. I mean, we've seen NBA players walk off the court before the game's over, whatever. It's always going to backfire on you every single time. So I don't really know if he shouldn't believe that it was going to work out when he decided not to do the presser, but you know, it is what it is.
I always think it's, man, that's so tough to do an interview right after you had a gut-wrenching loss, regardless of sport. I wish that an athlete could recognize and just say, give me 15 minutes to gather my thoughts and then come out and say something. Cause like Courtney said, if you don't speak at all, it's never going to go well. It just isn't, not ever. But there are times where I think, God, why are you interviewing this person right after the most crushing loss of their life? Like, what do you want them to say? Sometimes I feel like you're embarrassing them a little bit too, as well. So give them a chance to, you know, give them a chance to regroup and gather their thoughts and maybe say, hey, if I come back in 15 or 20 minutes, will you have a few quotes for the media? Like, I think we just jam microphones right down their face and say, hey, what'd you think of that three putt? You know, and it's like, well, what do you want me to say? I'm about to light you up right now.
Yeah, he had that though. He went and signed. I mean, so he had the time. He's out here playing for millions of dollars. He can do an interview. You've seen it in the past with guys like even like Tiger. I remember times when he would withdraw and they'd try to get comment from him. He'd say no comment. He would always give something to the pool reporter, right? Yeah. So, and John knows how that goes. He's reported on that a million times at this point. Yeah. But he could have given something to the pool reporter, done something of that sort, put out, give him a statement or something. I don't want to say that he owes it, but he kind of does. I mean, it's one of those, you're playing for all the money. This just, it comes with it. It comes with the territory. You talk good or bad.
Yeah, it's the life of a professional athlete. They assume that responsibility when they're in that spotlight. I mean, it sucks, but it's not like he's being interviewed after he lost a fight with his wife. Like,
and that's just one moment in your life that kind of sucks professionally. How good is your life otherwise because of your career? You know what I'm saying?
He's got way more benefits. Yeah, he's gone. He had second place finish at the Century. He had T17 at Pebble Beach. He was T17 at Torrey for the Genesis. And then he was second at API. Obviously, that's what we're talking about. And then he was T10 at the Players. So he hasn't had worse than a top 20 finish so far this season.
What are we complaining about? I mean, it was a rough finish. But, yeah, his life is overwhelmingly rewarded because of his career. And he made more money blowing that tournament, quote unquote, than most people make in 5 years. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just it's kind of crazy that he would do that and then get so defensive about it. It's what gets me. Like, he came out and he sought it out in that press conference.
The other thing too is that, like, he didn't play terrible. I mean, he made pars. He didn't make any putts. It wasn't like he went double, triple, or, you know, par quad. I mean, he just parred out. Like, that happens on tough golf courses sometimes when you're on the back nine competing, trying to win a tournament. I mean, I get it. If he didn't play, in my opinion, poorly enough to be so mad that he didn't, or so upset that he didn't, couldn't give, like, even the pool reporter something.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough situation there. Like, you're finishing second place in a signature event, right? That's kind of what it comes down to. It's a big tournament. So for him to just kind of blow off and not give anybody anything is, you know, it's a little bit of a tough look, but it is what it is, right? Like, these guys can make their own decisions and face the consequences depending on what people say about them. They can handle it. I mean, obviously didn't affect him too much mentally because he still did finish top 10 this week at the Players. Yeah. So, all right, guys, before we get into a couple of fun topics, let's talk about March Madness. Everyone's picking their brackets. Who's your picks?
How about yours? Let's get yours first.
You guys know I'm a huge basketball guy, right? I'm going to pick Duke, but I don't really have much insight on it. I just kind of, you know, I don't follow it as closely as you guys.
Cooper Flagg. That's all you need to say, John. Cooper Flagg.
Yeah.
And if the lottery balls bounce right, he could be playing for your Raptors next year.
He could be.
That'd be good.
Good.
That's the first news. John didn't even know who the Raptors are. That's the first time he's heard that.
He knows the Raptors. Come on.
I know the Raptors.
I don't know. Last week I would have thought that, you know, Auburn is the best team in the country, and I thought there's nobody that's going to dethrone them, but then they go lose like four of their last five or five of the last six. Now, Bruce Pearl was asked about it, their head coach, and he said, guys, we lost to Texas A&M, Tennessee, some of the elite teams in the country, so they're not losing to bad teams. It's not like they're faltering down the stretch, but SEC's king right now. I'm just going to go on a little bit of a sleeper pick here, not too big of a sleeper because they're probably still a top five team in the country, but I'm picking the Vols, baby, Tennessee.
Oh, shout out to Joey.
Somewhere Joey's really happy.
He guaranteed Tennessee was going to win it all.
I'm with you. I'm on it. I'm betting.
I know you just dogged out Auburn a little bit. I'm still going Auburn. Just going Auburn.
I'm going to go Duke. They just won the ACC tournament without two of their better players. Not that the ACC's having a big year this year, but to do that as young of a team as they are, it's still impressive. They won the championship game by like 10 or 15 over Louisville. There's some good sleepers out there though. St. John's, I think, is a good sleeper with Rick Pitino coaching. They're sneaky good. So the NCAA tournament's so cool. Anybody could win it or get to the Final Four, Elite Eight. There's a lot of teams that have, potential. A lot of them are in the SEC this year. Florida's got that guy that's, 8'7"? How tall is he?
Yeah, I don't think he plays.
He's a freshman.
I think he sits out. Did you see when they cut down the net? He didn't even get on the ladder. He just reached up.
No.
Wild.
Florida's playing well.
They are.
The SEC had 14 teams that got into the tournament. That's got to be a record.
Dude, if you're the 14th team in your conference, you shouldn't make it into any tournament.
It is a record. Appreciate you, Joey.
Listen.
Love you, dog.
In 2 years, that's how many SEC teams are going to make the college football playoff, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. there's a lot of SEC teams that are good, but they're now getting the basketball bias just like football.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, guys. We got to move on to the Creator Classic. I'm sure we'll be talking about March Madness every week though, right?
Yeah. Especially when Duke loses in the first round.
Yeah. Let me know about it when it happens. So Creator Classic, obviously Grant Horvat went on to win the actual event. I don't know if you guys watched. They were playing 8 holes at Sawgrass on the Wednesday before the tournament. So Trent Ryan, you guys all know Barstool Trent. obviously it's tough, right? Like he's an amateur like all of us. I mean, it's tough. Like TPC Sawgrass is no easy place to play. Especially with the crowd and, you know, the difficulty of the holes, the winds whipping. At 17, he actually made a 13, which is tough, obviously, right? And he actually fired a 61. So 29 over par for 8 holes on the back nine for Trent Ryan at the Creator Classic. I want to know, what do you guys think? Would you guys have shot better or worse than a 61 for those 8 holes with the crowds?
Man,
without the crowds, better. With the crowds, probably worse.
I don't know.
I'd be so worried about killing somebody. That's the only thing I would be terrified about.
29 over, that is. Remember we talked about this. We had a conversation and we said that, could you hit the island green? And I was confident. Watching Trent, I'm a little less confident myself because I'm obviously, you know, an amateur golfer like the rest of us. I think that there would be some blow-up holes. But to shoot 29 over on 8 holes, that's a blow-up hole every hole. There's just a lot of bad golf shots being hit there. I'm better than 29 over.
That's with those new irons.
Hey. Shout out to Titleist sponsored.
That's almost an average.
That's a lot of duck hooks. That's a lot of fat shots. I'm 29 over. Put almost me on that foreplay pod. I'll play Trent for money.
Almost an average of 8 shots per hole. That's quite
right. He got into double digits twice on 17.
Yeah.
He got into double digits twice, 16 and 17. So it happens.
That wasn't the only major moment that happened at the Creator Classic. I'm not sure if you guys saw Fat Perez.
On
17.
That was just quick putt.
crazy putt. Right, I mean, who did it better, Fat Perez or Tiger Woods in 2001?
Tiger. I mean,
that putt by Fat Perez was one of the best putts I've ever seen on video from an amateur. I mean, that was tremendous. And I am all in on Fat Perez. I love what he does. I love his content. Yeah. I wish I could have that opportunity to be there. That would have been so much fun. Those guys are gold. Hats off to him for making that putt. Congrats. It was definitely an iconic moment. He was feeling it.
The real question is, who had the better call? Was it Danny Rapp or Gary Koch for Tigers? Because Danny Rapp let out like a yeah as soon as it went in, which was great. It was awesome.
You guys remember Fat Perez was out on the course at Kapalua for the Century, and he was doing an interview with PGA Tour Live, and I forget who was it, like Mark Rolfing or something?
Yeah.
Was it Mark?
I think Rolfing? It was. He just kept calling him Fat.
Yeah, he ended the interview and he's like, "Thank you, Fat."
Thank you, Fat.
Great content, and it just lives on the internet forever, and it's hilarious. Grant Horvat won the event. There were some decent names in the field. George Bryan, I mean, obviously, Chris Solomon from No Laying Up, Roger Steele, Fat Perez, Kyle Berkshire, Tisha Allen, Gabby Golf Girl, Wesley Bryan, Trent. So that was the field. So there's more Creator Classic events planned for this year, I believe. So
yeah, there's two more.
There's two more. Yeah. There's one at the, is it the Myrtle Beach event?
I think it's at Quail Hollow, PGA.
Oh.
And then at East Lake, I believe. Right?
Yeah. No, one is at East Lake for sure. And then I have to double check.
Or is it at the one that replaced Quail Hollow?
Yeah, I think it might be. So we'll check on that.
It's going to be exciting. We'll watch it.
Horvath's yeah. good. That guy can play some golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
yeah, good. And Grant Horvath is a good player as well, right? Yeah. He was actually asked on the Dan on Golf show today on Scratch's account about would he accept a sponsor's invitation to play a PGA Tour event.
Very non-committal.
Do you guys think he could compete with those guys? Like, I mean, obviously not compete, but like, do you think it would be worth it for him to tee it up? Like, would it add some juice to the event?
I'd watch. Why not?
Yeah, if it's a smaller event that needs some like life to it, yeah, I could see that. That would be interesting to see. I mean, he even said today on Dan on Golf that like there's a huge difference between him and a tour pro. Just a huge difference. So it's not that he even thinks he could compete. It's just going to be – it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah,
I don't know if he will, but he was very non-committal about it.
I think the nerves would be – you know, if you've ever watched any of his stuff, he still gets, you know, those nerves just in a one-on-one. He still talks about how he gets those nerves. And like Hutch said earlier, anytime you're in front of huge crowds, it just is so amplified. And it's just so hard to hit good shots when you – feel that pressure of those people staring at you and the reaction to what you're about to do or four and they got a duck. You know, it would be, I would watch it and you never know. He hits lightning in a bottle. Could be a really cool moment for him.
Yeah. Actually the second Creator Classic event this year is actually going to be at the Philadelphia Cricket Club, which is the host of the Truist Championship.
Since Quail Hollow has the PGA. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly right. That's the replacement. And then at East Lake, obviously, for the Tour Championship. That's where the inaugural Creator Classic was last year.
Nice. Maybe I should go watch that one.
Yeah, it's close to you.
It's right down the road.
Yeah, close to you. So, the East Lake one last year, was it Luke Kwan who won, I want to say? I think Luke Kwan won the Classic last year.
Sounds right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. He played some good golf too. Like he made a bunch of putts coming home too to win it. So yeah, that was good. And
homie Kwan.
Yeah. All right. What do you guys want to take a look at the viral? You guys want to take a look at the viral video of the week?
Put it up. Put it up.
Hurts to watch.
Joey, put it up. It's this Rory taking a fan's phone.
This is brutal.
Let's play the video if we have it. Not sure if we have the video right now or not, but essentially Rory McIlroy tells this college golfer, Luke Potter. Luke Potter makes a comment. He makes a chirp at Rory, talking about referring to the 2011 Masters when he hit it in the water. This is after Rory hit it in the water at 17 during the practice round. And then, does his chirp. And then Rory comes over and he's like, let me see your phone. And he takes his phone and he just walks away with it. Literally just walks off with Rory's or with Luke Potter's phone.
Yeah.
Kid you not. Like this post went absolutely crazy. Went viral like crazy.
And, yeah, it sucks to see Rory hear it and acknowledge it. I mean, you expect him to block it out because I'm sure how many times has Rory heard a chirp? I mean, I guess just maybe because it was in the practice round and it was quieter and it was I actually read that this guy, this college golfer, Luke, wasn't just a one-time chirp. That it had been going on for multiple holes prior. I don't know if there's any validity to that, but I hate to see Rory react to it. And then I just don't love the image that it gives Rory, but I think we have the video if we're ready for it. Up to you.
Yeah, guys. It looks like we got the video now.
Yes. he asked for it and then just kind of took it.
Yeah, phone's not coming back.
Like, can I see your phone? Give me it.
When you guys sent that to us, you sent that to us in a text, and I was like, I didn't believe it at first. I thought that was like his assistant or something. He was just going to get his phone. Just it was so casual and so nonchalant that I thought that was his cell phone that he was going to get. Literally didn't believe it.
And you can but just see.
It makes him look so silly. Like I saw, did you see Big Cat from Barstool? Like he had probably the best take on it, I thought. If he doesn't do that and that kid posts a video, he's the one who looks bad. Now Rory's the one who looks bad. He gave the other kid the upper hand is what he said. And I couldn't agree with that anymore if I tried. Like that's, he definitely gave him the upper hand. He handled it poorly, but I, you know, if what you're saying is true, Courtney, if those reports are true that he'd been doing it for multiple holes, then you know, I'd probably get mad too. At some point, I'm going to stand up and say, that's enough. Like, I'm just not going to do that. I don't know about stealing his phone, but
I can't see Rory reacting to one comment.
Yeah, that's, that's where I was at. I was kind of like that. I thought like that. I was like, man, he really did that after one comment. He couldn't just laugh it off and have fun with it and say, yeah, you know, poor shot, or, you know, make a joke about it and have a good time with it. But I think that if it was going on for multiple holes during this, I would be like, come on, man.
Essentially, what happened, you could kick him out. You could get him removed.
Yeah. Essentially, what happened is he said, just like 2011 at Augusta. Like, that was the comment after it went in the water. And then he actually gave a comment. Luke Potter actually gave a comment to Golf Channel. And he said, look, I just made a mistake and I take ownership for it. I apologize for it. That's about all that needs to be said. It's just a good learning experience. Yeah, I apologize. He was actually tossed from the event as well. I don't know if I don't know if Rory had tour security remove him or if he was just removed by tour security after this incident. But Luke Potter was not welcome back to TPC Sawgrass that day. And I mean, obviously it's essentially the PGA Tour. They put out a statement as well, I think, or somebody gave a statement to golf.com or Golf Channel. And the tour rep said that he was in violation of the fan conduct policy for making rude or harassment style comments. So
does this dude have a chance to go pro?
I think so.
Cause he plays at Texas. Like he's got to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be awkward if he makes it.
First pairing
present an interesting. He won't have any practice rounds with Rory. I think you can say safely.
Rory was actually asked by a reporter at the Players. Luke Potter's actually a top amateur. Actually, now that I think of it, and Rory was asked by a reporter, hey, Rory, can I ask you about the incident with the phone?
He said no.
And Rory's like, no, you can't. And then the reporter's like, why? And he's like, because I said no.
Because I don't want you to. He said, because I don't want you to.
Yeah, I don't want you to. Yeah. So obviously, but then it begs the
question, like, why are we giving Morikawa grief when Rory's doing pretty much the same thing? It's like, I'm here, but you can't ask me that question because I'm not going to answer it.
Yeah.
Like it's an interesting little thing. It will be awkward though if that kid makes it on tour.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a viral moment. Maybe. The actual video of Rory taking the phone and walking off did 5 million views. So that's why we're talking about it right now.
Pretty solid.
Regardless though, fellas, it's been an amazing, great first episode for us this week. You know, just talking shit about golf. We're going to try and do this every Monday night if we can. It's going to go live on our X, on our YouTube account. You can subscribe. Go subscribe to us on YouTube. You can watch it live here, right here on X. We're live. And we're also going to be putting this out on all the places that you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. If there's any other places that you guys want to see it on, let us know, but probably the main two for sure on Apple and Spotify. And, if any of you guys have any final sort of comments, obviously we got the Valero this week.
It's the letdown after the Players championship is usually what it's called. It's Valspar. I think.
Yeah.
Valspar.
Is it Valspar this week?
I believe
probably
it is.
Know that.
I believe it is because that tournament got some life a few years ago when Tiger played and should have won. I will maintain that till the day I die.
Yeah, it's Valspar this week at the Copperhead course. You guys remember when Tiger randomly played the event and got second?
Should have won. He didn't make a putt all day until it was either the second to last or the last hole. He made a long one, but he didn't make a putt all day on Sunday.
On 17.
Yeah, a long one on 17, and then I think he ended up losing by one. That was what a week that was. God, that was such a good time.
Spieth wins this week.
Spieth wins this week. Yeah, this is a ball strikers course, I think, right? It's like it's tiny greens, and you need to hit your irons well. Who are you guys? Do you guys have any picks?
Yeah, I like Spieth too.
Isn't Justin Thomas playing?
He is playing, I believe. Yeah, he is
give
playing.
Me him. I want Justin Thomas.
That was pretty wild last week, 78-62.
You saw Trent posted something about him having a lower score than Justin Thomas, which I thought was hilarious. But
I think Xander committed to the Valspar too.
He did, yeah. I think he's trying to catch up on some tournaments he missed. It's been good. We're all here. We're going to do this, I guess, every week, and you guys are getting to see the face behind the account that you've all wondered who he was for a long time. They're in the top left corner of your screen, number one in your hearts. Number one in your hearts, the parking spot tracker in the flesh right there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been fun, fellas. So we will see everyone next week for the next live episode. We'll be recapping the Valspar and any other news that we have throughout the week. There's always lots to talk about in golf. So we're going to try and do this every week, and hope you guys will join us, and we'll see you next week.